Yanto had been home for 6 hours and was nearly out of things to clean, sort, or fiddle with when he realized exactly what Jack had said. He blinked at the swath of half-cleared dust on top of the bookshelf. Regulations. Queen Victoria. His breath stirred up the dust. Yanto pressed his lips together and attacked it again, his dazed brain finally clicking into motion. Queen Victoria had laid down plenty of regulations. Torchwood 1 had had stacks of them, and the one about no living children certainly rang true. Yanto hadn't thought to question it. Jack would have been banking on that, on Yanto remembering the old regulations and obeying them without a thought when they were brandished, like a dog cowering before a raised hand. But Queen Victoria would have had a few things to say about keeping the Walking Dead on as Torchwood operatives, too, which was to say nothing of immortals from the 51st century, no matter how good they smelled, even before a shower. Yanto got down off the step stool and carried the filthy rag to the sink, his teeth grinding together so hard that his temples pounded with pressure as he rinsed the cloth. Jack didn't quote any law higher than himself. Not ever. Not unless he wanted to shut someone up with his appeal to irrelevant authority. Not unless it suited his own purpose. Sod Queen Victoria. Jack wanted him out because of this. Jack wanted to send him away, wipe his memory and turn him loose, all because of this. This thing in him. This thing that mattered to Jack more than keeping Yanto on the team did. Jack never let anybody leave the team, not even when they died. Jack was ready to just hand Yanto over for this, and he expected Yanto to fall in line. He wanted Yanto to fall in line. My choice, Yanto breathed. Some choice between the end of his life as he knew it and knowing Jack wanted him gone, knowing Jack would regard him as nothing short of insubordinate if he stayed. He remembered the sound of Jack's revolver behind him, remembered still the feeling of the cold barrel pressed to his skull, Jack ordering him to his knees, ordering him to kill Lisa. Insubordination was betrayal to Jack. He had chosen to forgive Yanto once, but no one Jack loved had died that night. Yanto shut the water off. He reached for the kettle, turned it on, turned it off again. The kettle was not quite what was called for just now. Yanto had started out standing in the kitchen, drinking directly from the bottle. This had turned, gradually, to lying on the kitchen floor, and then, when he noticed how much the sparkling, bloody clean lino reminded him of both the table in autopsy and the floor of Jack's office, he'd migrated to the lounge. He was lying between the settee and the coffee table, a narrow space like a morgue drawer, but warmer and carpeted. The glass of the bottle felt nice against his flushed cheek, like a mother's hand for a fevered child. Yanto scowled at his belly. Is that to be me now? Your mum? You'd do better with the bottle. He'd been talking to it on and off since sometime after he'd started drinking. He figured if it started talking back, he'd know it was time to stop. So far, all was quiet. He seemed more in danger of running out of vodka than conjuring up any really horrifying hallucinations. On the other hand, the night was young, and he was reasonably certain that he'd left an emergency bottle in a cupboard somewhere, for medicinal purposes, in extremis. Torchwood 1 had taught him that much. Always be prepared. Always be more prepared than that. When someone knocked at his door, he emitted a sound very like a growl and hauled himself to his feet. Doors were always his bloody job, stood down or not. That Yanto, he certainly can answer a door. Jack would wipe his memory and pat him on the head and send him off to be a receptionist, an actual receptionist somewhere, where he could rock a cradle and open doors and rot. Yanto leaned against the door when he'd got there and didn't look through to see who it was. It was more fun to guess. I'm utterly pissed, he announced, loudly enough to carry. So if it's tea and sympathy, it's a bit late. And if that's Jack, he added, suddenly inspired by the certain knowledge that there was no possibility of it being Jack, you can bugger off and take Queen Victoria with you. There was no more sound from outside, and Yonto twisted, still bracing himself against the door to see where he'd left the bottle. It might be worth finding the other while he was standing, if he could remember where he'd left it. "Beer and curry," Tosh said, and Yonto jumped. He'd forgotten anyone was there. "Curry?" Yonto repeated, and he could almost smell it. Maybe he could smell it. Tosh was right outside the door. "Curry, Tosh. Come in. You're hired. You can start immediately." It took another moment of work to get the locks off, and then to get himself off the door enough to open it for Tosh. But she did, in fact, have lots of curry and quite a respectable quantity of beer. If she made any sort of remark about him eating for two, Yonto decided he was going to eat hers as well. But all she said was, "Gwen thought you probably hadn't eaten all day, so I..." She got round the setting and set the bag of food on the coffee table, and then bent and picked up a open bottle from the floor, setting it down beside the beer. Yonto homed in on it like a beacon, falling onto the settee when he stumbled over it along the way. By the time he'd sorted out his arms and legs, and up and down, Tosh was offering him a container of takeaway. Yonto realized he was starving, like stopping by the chip shop after the pub closed. He ate quickly, without speaking or even looking up, till he abruptly remembered the part about vomiting in the street in front of the chip shop. He set the rest of his food down carefully and leaned back against the cushions. When he finally looked over, he found Tosh watching him, well into her beer, though she'd scarcely touched her curry. "Yonto," she said hesitantly, "I wanted to talk to you. This is probably not the best time, but I wanted you to know..." Right, of course it had been Tosh to come after him. Tea and sympathy, indeed. Yonto eyed the beer, wondering if he could move enough to get himself one without regretting it. "Yonto, I..." "When you were 19, Yonto said, and then he thought maybe he should have let her finish that sentence herself. He glanced over at her, but she didn't look altogether shocked. He supposed there was no need to explain having read anyone else's file when you were the sort of person who wound up working for Torchwood. Tosh leaned over and picked up a beer, took the top off, and passed it to him. He tipped the bottle toward her in a clumsy salute by way of thanks, and took a sip, wondering if she'd any more to say about it than that, or if it was just solidarity on principle. "I was at school," she said, staring down at her beer bottle. "I thought I had to choose. No, I did have to choose. That child I might have had, or the career I'd been working toward all my life. The life I've been working toward all my life." Yonto didn't bother asking if the father had been her boss, had held her life in his hand. He'd had enough girlfriends to have learned that it was poor form to try and top the story on offer. Tosh looked up and met his eyes with a smile. "By the time I got to Torchwood, I'd realized that had been my only chance. There's no later for us." She took another sip, and Yonto followed suit, years worth of work on the Torchwood statistical survey bubbling up in his brain. Mean and median lifespans of operatives. Cardiff's had always been lowest, but none of them topped 30 years, not even junior researchers in London. He hadn't had time to get drunk over that. He'd had to be up early and back to work. "But we only get one chance at this, too," Tosh said. "And I wouldn't have missed Torchwood for anything." Yonto couldn't think of a word to say to that. He wouldn't, either. This grand adventure. The first time he'd ever thought he was contributing to anything but the generic bustle of a city that needed coffees and mobiles and shoes sold to it. And then there was Jack, of course, because Jack and Torchwood Cardiff were practically the same thing. And Tosh, and Owen, and Gwen, and all the wonder of the infinite fucking universe. He wouldn't trade any of it for anything. Not the doing of it, not the remembering of it, not for any other life, and not for anyone else's life either. Only it might not be up to him. He might be on the verge of having it taken away whether he'd choose it or not. If he did stay, he might still lose everything that Torchwood had come to mean to him. Jack. Still, for now, he'd got Tosh and beer and curry and knowing what he knew. He extended his bottle toward hers again and murmured, "Cheers." Tosh clinked and drained the last of her drink. When she came up for air, it was with a bright smile firmly in place. "Cheers." Yanto woke up to the immediate awareness that he must keep very, very still or something terrible would happen. It was not an unfamiliar sensation. He kept his eyes shut tight and tried to remember where he was, or, failing that, who he'd been with, or, failing that, whether he might have to go to work in the immediate future. He had a vague sense that this job was not one he could just quit due to a hangover, though he couldn't quite remember why. Possibly remembering was the terrible thing that would happen if he moved. "Tosh is sleeping on your couch," Jack said, much too loudly. Yanto's eyes flew open and then shut again, but he still managed to perceive that Jack was sitting on the edge of his bed, facing away from him. The complete events of the past 24 hours came crashing in upon Yanto's consciousness, dragging the headache and the pitiful urge to crawl under the bed and die in their wake. Torchwood was bloody amazing for putting your hangover into perspective. Not that perspective helped at all. Not when perspective left him still inside his body with this thing. And Jack. Jack was facing away from him again. "There's water and painkillers on the table," Jack said, still much too loud. Yanto cracked one cautious eyelid, and there was indeed an uncapped bottle of water within his reach, and beside it, two suspiciously innocuous-looking white tablets. "Painkillers, sir?" Yanto croaked. He'd figured, when he tried to think it out at all, that Jack couldn't actually retcon him until after he'd had the child. Then again, he hadn't thought Jack would try to trick him into taking it either. "Yes, Jones," Jack said, sounding tired. Yanto was opening his mouth to ask what Jones was supposed to mean when he realized he'd let out a "sir" there. "Panadol, from the bottle in the bathroom. I just came by to get Tosh. She was late and not answering her mobile. I'll let myself out when I've got her moving." Yanto was half tempted to throw the bottle of water at Jack's head, but then he'd have nothing to wash the pills down with. And he wasn't sure he even cared if it was retcon, as long as it made his headache go away. He lifted his head far enough to drink and swallow, and kept swallowing water until his stomach ached. Then he pressed his face back into the pillow, one hand still holding the bottle of water upright beside it. He was nearly asleep again when it was tugged free of his slackening grip. It wasn't until the soft footfalls had reached the door that he realized if he'd turned his head just then, he might have managed to meet Jack's eyes. Yanto woke up to the desperate need to piss and the wonderful smell of coffee he hadn't had to make himself. Flatmates who made coffee in the morning were brilliant and could be forgiven any number of damp towels, annoying girlfriend dramas, and late rent checks. Yanto smiled into his pillow, pleased with his good fortune. The first thing he saw when he lifted his head was the open bottle of water on the table beside his bed, in the peculiar gray light of a rainy afternoon in Cardiff. He didn't have flatmates, and it had just been Panadol. His head felt quite bearable, even as his stomach twisted itself into knots. No point in facing this with a full bladder, anyway, Yanto considered as he tended to his immediate needs, that it was in some sense a measure of his life. There were precisely 4 people in the world who might have made coffee in his flat. None of them would have been deterred by the fact that he hadn't given them a key. One of them was undead and couldn't drink coffee. One was at least as hungover as he was, and had likely been rousted by their boss. And of the other 2, he couldn't honestly say which he'd rather it was, though each would be excruciating in their own way. Jack was standing at the kitchen counter, staring out the window with a coffee mug in one hand. He looked up as Yanto came in, and Yanto realized he'd known it would be Jack. If he'd been expecting Gwen, he'd have put on a shirt, as well as trousers. He also realized that Jack was wearing the same clothes he'd had on the day before, and was clutching that coffee mug like a lifeline. "I sent Tosh home," Jack said, and his voice was soft enough now that Yanto's brain wasn't trying to escape his skull via his eardrums. He probably hadn't been actually shouting before. Jack was meeting Yanto's eyes, finally, and looking nowhere else. For all the time he'd spent undressing Yanto with his gaze in the last year and a half, now that Yanto was standing in front of him shirtless and barefoot, he wasn't stealing a glance. Yanto resisted the urge to cover himself anyway. "I handled yesterday badly," Jack said slowly, formally, or like he'd memorized the words. "I apologize." Yanto looked away, wondering what to make of that. Finally, he pushed off the wall and went to the coffee maker, leaving a few feet of empty space between himself and Jack as he poured his own cup. It would be childish, he supposed, to demand whether it had been Gwen or Tosh who coached him on those phrases. Jack was making an effort. The coffee wasn't actually bad, either. Yanto went and sat down at the kitchen table. He wrapped his hands around the coffee cup and did not look at Jack, did not speak. He still hadn't worked out what to say. Obviously, Jack was here to talk, which rather flew in the face of yesterday's declaration that it was Yanto's choice and he should stay out of Jack's sight until it was done. Jack came and sat down across from him. When Jack opened his mouth, Yanto spoke first, the words ill-considered but necessary as his next breath. "Please don't." Jack stayed silent, watching him, leaving more silence for Yanto to fill. Yanto looked down again, clutching his mug. "Jack, please, don't ask me to do it." His shoulders hunched protectively, and he wished he had a shirt on. The chair back was cold, making him break out in goose flesh. "Because I will, if you ask me to. I won't even remember to hate you for it afterward." A shirt might have been warmer, but the shield of it would have been an illusion. This was as naked as he could possibly be before Jack, admitting aloud what they both knew. Of course he would do as Jack asked, even this, even the end of his life as he knew it. This thing inside him that his whole body wanted to pull away from and could not escape. There might even be some relief in bowing to Jack's wishes, an end to the crushing weight of responsibility for the choice. "If you ask me to, I will," Yanto repeated. And still, some mad piece of him, the fierce, stupid will to live, to hold his own life as it slipped from his grasp, kept him talking. "But please, Jack, please don't ask." Yanto had been ready to die for years now, young and violently and weirdly. He wouldn't mind it at all if he could just take with him the knowledge that Jack Harkness had loved him and relied upon him once. He hadn't been ready for anything like this, an unthinkable biological accident, as senseless as a car crash. "Yanto," Jack said quietly, but Yanto couldn't look up. He flinched automatically from the motion in his peripheral vision and watched Jack's hand fall slowly to rest on the table between them. "I really, really intended not to be lying when I said we weren't going to hurt you." Jack sounded horribly sorry, not just stiffly and formally apologetic. Yanto closed his eyes and waited for the blow to fall. "I'm not going to ask you to do anything, or order you to," Jack continued gently. Yanto felt as if the floor had opened up under him, dropping him into a whole new depth of impossible choices. Jack wouldn't be angry at him now. Jack would be hurt by him, and this would always be between them, always this ache, always the fact that Yanto had flinched from Jack's touch, always the fact that Jack had left it up to Yanto, and whatever Yanto chose would be wrong. "If you did have a living child," Jack said slowly, startling Yanto into looking up at him. Was he bargaining now? But it was Jack's turn to stare into his coffee, and he'd withdrawn his hand from the middle of the table. "If you could just skip over everything else and there was a child in the world independent of your actual body, a child who was ours, would that be a problem? Is it the fact that it exists at all, or just where and when?" "Just where and when? But perhaps those were disposable problems to an immortal former time agent in his second century at Torchwood, with God knew what secret resources to call upon." Yanto tried to imagine what heaven and earth Jack was proposing to move to extricate them from this situation. And then there would be a child, and what would either of them do with that? "I don't understand," Yanto said finally. "Jack, what are you asking me?" Jack took a deep breath and looked Yanto straight in the eyes as he spoke. "I've got Tosh and Owen looking into a third option." Yanto pressed both hands flat to the table, heart racing with something like hope. Jack had come up with a third option, and didn't Jack always find some way to save the day? "It's something we've had in the archive for years. It was shelved because its applications as a weapon are pretty limited. It'll scan the environment around a developing life form, recreate it inside the device, and then teleport the fetus inside, leaving the parent intact. It can finish growing there or be held in stasis almost indefinitely. The device is alien, but Tosh is trying to get it talking to us in a way we can understand, and Owen is going to test the adaptability for terrestrial mammals." So there it was, a way out. Get the thing out of him, put it in stasis, put off the question of what to do with it. Yanto could keep on as he had been, and Jack wouldn't blame him for a choice that wasn't really made yet. But Yanto had been too well trained by his years with Torchwood, and latched on inexorably to the idea Jack had brushed off too fast. Applications as a weapon are pretty limited. There was only one way you could use a device like that as a weapon. Kidnap an unborn child, hold it for ransom, threaten its life and safety until the parents gave you whatever you asked for. If only you let it live. Let them stand by helpless, knowing their child's fate was out of their hands. Jack and Tosh and Owen working on this as if it were another alien crisis. Jack himself was here, negotiating with Yanto. Yanto stared at him. "Jack, this isn't a hostage situation." "Spoken like a man who's never had to take a hostage," Jack said easily. And Yanto found that, like most of Jack's idle half-comments on his past, all too easy to picture. Of course, it hadn't yet been 24 hours since the last time Jack held him at gunpoint. "There are plenty of gray areas," Jack assured him, meeting his eyes readily without a trace of anger or fear. "But I backed you into a corner, and now I'm offering you a way to get out again. I'm just cleaning up after myself." Yanto looked from Jack to the coffee he hadn't had to make himself. "Well," Yanto said, numb and bewildered, too shocked to even feel relief. "I suppose it was bound to happen eventually."